You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
Hey everybody, Paulie here from Hard Drive Radio, and man, I am so excited today to have one of the most exciting bands I've seen in a long time coming into the studio today. And I'm talking about the Fever 333. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming to see me today.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having us.
We got Jason, we got Eric, we got Steven. Man, I know you guys are playing a show tonight in Brooklyn. Unfortunately, I won't be able to make that one, but I will be coming to the Saturday show.
Sick.
So I'm hoping that, you know, you bring it just as hard. If the Vegas show was anything, man, I tell you, like, you just blew everybody away. That was nuts.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you. That's really cool.
Tell me about, like, that wasn't your first show as a band, but tell me about playing that gig in Vegas.
Yeah, it was our fourth show as a band, and that gig was, honestly, it was more so, we didn't know anything about it. We didn't know, like, that sort of event or the convention that was happening. We didn't know anything about it. It was, you know, our friends at the label that knew about it. Phil also obviously, like, kind of liaised for us while we were there and held us down. So we didn't know anything. We just went in and just kind of did exactly what it is we always do. Actually, minus a couple elements, too, because it wasn't our show necessarily. We've only been playing shows that we put on. So, yeah, we just kind of went in and did what it was we do. And luckily, I guess you liked it, so that was tight. I'm glad you did.
Unquestionably. I mean, I'll say, you know, whenever I'm talking to people about your band, I don't think I've seen a band, and I don't just mean, like, you.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the entire band does not hold still.
Yeah.
Like, you guys make full use of the stage. I don't know where you get the energy from. It's nuts.
It's pure stoke.
Yeah. Just hyped, yeah. I used to attribute it to, like, eating too many, like, sweets, but, like, I'm on a diet now, so I don't know.
You're still wild.
Yeah. I don't know what it is.
I mean, Eric, even you, like, you know, behind the kit, drummers, you know, usually get to sit for a lot of the show. You're not sitting half the time, man. You're, like, jumping around as much as everybody else.
Yeah, I think I went through a long period of my life where I didn't want to play drums for that reason. And then, I don't know, I just had to find a way to do it. It's just, especially in a band with them, it doesn't really seem fair if everybody else gets to jump off shit and I'm stuck sitting. So we figured it out.
Good. I want to kind of talk about the formation of this band, starting with the end of Let Live. You know, Jason, what were you doing after that band broke up, and how long before the seeds of this band were planted?
That's actually a really funny question. So, like, as that happened, I was actually I was prepping to become a father. So I was working like a real job. So I called a family friend who still owns this bomb ass cookie company. So I was working for that cookie company and I was pushing cookies, and the best vegan gluten free cookie I've ever had, to be honest. And this isn't just a plug for her, but Delicious Cookies. Shouts out to them.
So good.
And I was at this. Was at a really kind of like a bougie grocery store up in Calabasas, and that's where. You know, Travis Barker happens to live up in that area. His goddaughter had seen me there, knew I was from a band, knew Let Live, showed him like a video of me like flipping into fences and like doing really ridiculous stuff, and showed him. He found out that I knew John Feldman. John Feldman linked us up. We got together and just started talking about something that we wanted to see, which was like kind of like this black punk rock, like this POC sort of alternative music. With hip hop and punk rock influence, and we started writing these songs, and then very quickly after, I was like, okay, we got to put like a band together so we can be out there together and doing this, you know, on the road. And the first people I thought of were the gentlemen sitting next to me, Eric and Proda and Steven Harrison. So that's kind of like the beginning of all this was that.
Steve, let's kind of go back and tell me, you know, the experience for you when Jason started talking to you about this band.
I was at work when he called me. I used to work for this TV station. It was like a digital job, so I sat in a cubicle all day and just kind of like, you know, did that whole thing. And I was super over it. I mean, I love everyone there, but it just wasn't for me. And Jason texted me, and I was like, what is this going to be about? Because at the time, I didn't know that he was doing this. I was like, oh, I wonder if it's like, you know, something with Let Live, you know, maybe someone can't play a show and needs to fill in. But he was like, yo, you still trying to play music? I was like, yeah, yes, please. Like, I'm get me out. And I guess he sent me the songs. I was feeling them. Flew to L.A. probably like a week or two, because there was like a sense of kind of like urgency, like let's get out here and get this moving soon. Got out there, was like working on the songs, and then I've played with Eric before. We played like a show or two, I think, together, but we hadn't like met, you know, but we were like cool. But we got in the car together, all three of us, and rode to practice together and like kind of like just play for the first time, and it was just clicked like really, really well, really fast, because we're all familiar with each other, how we play, and everything. It just, you know, it's just the right combination of dudes. Like we just are, you know, like Jason and I had been talking about playing music prior to this for years, you know, so it was just time, you know.
Eric, tell me your impressions about that first time jamming together.
It was awesome. It was definitely kind of like a trippy scenario, because me and Jason had been jamming before, just kind of trying to figure out stuff. I mean, he'd hit me up prior to everything, just trying to figure out what he wanted to do. And then this had all come into play, and I had jammed a couple times at John's with Jason. And when we were talking about guitar players, Steven was the first one that we had brought up pretty instantly. And again, it's like when you meet someone for the first time thinking like, okay, we're going to try this. I don't know. We didn't really have a ton of expectation, but like Steven said, it was pretty instant. I mean, it wasn't anything forced. There wasn't like a lot of conversation like, oh, let's change this or anything along those lines. It was just felt really natural. And as it's progressed, it's kind of just been nice to get pushed constantly. I mean, I feel like every show is, I mean, we'll see what happens on this tour, but every show's gotten a little crazier. So yeah, it's been fun.
I feel like that bar is set pretty damn high already. So. I don't know, man. Oh. I don't know how much crazier it can get.
We got ups. We could jump over that bar in a minute. You know
for sure, for sure. We haven't hit our stride yet. I think that's the thing, is we've played like a handful of shows and they each get more and more fun. But I think it's like our first string of shows, so we can really kind of like feel what it's like to like play night after night and get a real feel for a set, you know. And I think that's when we'll be in our real element, like physically, you know. And as a band, like feeling each other out, you know, it's going to be cool. Yeah.
It's also fun too, because it pretty much like forces you into the headspace you need to be for a show. Like the first 30 seconds when you see what everybody else is doing, you can't help but be into whatever you're playing. So it's kind of refreshing to not have to generate that yourself, because you have it around you so frequently. So that's been pretty cool too.
Tell me about the origin for the name.
Essentially, myself, John and Travis were just throwing names at each other in a group text, and we ended up, you know, putting the Fever on that list. And in my mind, it was a perfect sort of representation of an idea spreading, infecting, and also it's this sort of like ambivalence on the name, and almost like, I guess, sort of repurposing what a fever could be considered as, something that starts either in the mind or in the body, and then it can be contracted by one or two people, and then that thing spreads in a very viral sense. So this message for us is, again, something that we want to spread, you know, not only between ourselves or the scene we may be immediately associated with, but throughout the world. And I know that seems like, again, delusional grandeur or highly ambitious, but I figure, you know, it's about time for someone to be a little delusional in punk rock and hip hop. So here we are.
I'll say ambitious.
Yeah.
Which, that's not
a
bad thing.
There you go. Thank you.
The number 333, is that because there's three of you, or is it more complicated than that?
Everything runs in threes in the band. Everything. Like our more major posts, our the members in the touring party, you know, part of this collective. Everything has to do with the number three. And three, obviously, you know, it has so many, I guess, beliefs affixed to it. But one of them, and one of the strongest ones, would be the 3 points of a triangle being the strongest shape known to man. It props things up, which can also lend itself to the idea of solidarity and strength. And in those points of our triangle would be the three C's. C is the third letter of the The alphabet. It's also the alphabet, though. That's a new thing. Mm-hmm. We'll talk to you about that on the second, on the next record, on the full length, the alphabet. But for the alphabet, there's three C's in our alphabet, and they stand for community, charity, and change. So that's really the more like elaborate meaning for the 333 behind the fever. Yeah.
I want to get more into that in a minute, but first I want to talk a little more about Travis Barker and John Feldman's involvement in the band. Tell me how, you know, getting together with them and those first writing sessions, how that went.
Honestly, man, it was a trip because I grew up listening to Blink-182. Travis era is like what changed my whole life, listening to, you know, a punk rock oriented band. So Enema of the State, where Travis jumped in the band after Dude Ranch, like, changed my life. It was the anthem to my eighth grade summer. I'm talking everything, bro. I got, like, my first, like, real kiss, you know what I'm saying? Like, I you know, went to Disneyland by myself for the first time with my homeboy, and he kissed a girl that he just met. It was crazy. Like, it was a crazy time in my life. So that already was wild. And then John was in this band, Goldfinger, and also had produced some of my favorite records, you know, especially the used self-titled. Like, I was super into that back in the day. And John, I remember Goldfinger, I used to play Tony Hawk's Pro Skater on PlayStation 1, and I would restart it if it wasn't Superman. I'd restart the level so I could get on the Superman or Suicide Machines or Dead Kennedys. There was three that I wanted to listen to, and those are the three. So, I mean, getting together with them already for me was some sort of, like, almost fantastical idea. Them together in one room was wild. And when we started writing, you know, I was very well versed in writing and music and performing, but these are guys that I looked up to my whole life, you know. And when we got together, they evened out the playing field for me. They gave me a voice. They listened to my ideas. They, you know, implemented my ideas in the songs. And we wrote "We're Coming In" with our buddy Ben Scheuer at the time. He was around, and it was instant, man. It was instant. Like, it made sense. We knew exactly what this was going to be and what it was going to, you know, sound and feel like from the first session we had. Yeah.
Tell me about writing the songs for the EP Made in America. Where was the most of that writing done, and where did you record it?
Most of that writing was done at John Feldman's studio, which happens to be in his house as well, which is sick. So you could, like, you know, jam a song, and then he could make you this crazy ass shake that he makes with, like almond milk and cacao nibs or something. It's really good. Anyway, just to paint you a little picture, like, imagine being in John Feldman's studio and then getting some crazy ass shake after you make a song. Right. That's a little backstory for you. And then, but we also did segments of it at Travis's studio. So between Travis's studio and John Feldman's studio, that's where the Made in America EP came to life.
And Steven and Eric, you guys were in on these sessions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. There was definitely, commuting from Orange County, there was definitely a time when I, like, got 4 hours of sleep just because I would get a call from John to show up and go through that wonderful three-hour traffic, stay there for 8 hours, 3 hours back, go to bed, same thing.
Pick me up, drop me off. Like, just, he went through it with that driving.
But it was fun.
Yeah.
Good. The single is "Walking in My Shoes," and I'm not looking specifically for what the song is about, but more just of an anecdote of writing that song and making that song, and maybe what was inspiring you at the time.
To be 100, like, we were just trying to create, really trying to find that balance, you know what I'm saying, between hip hop and punk rock when we were writing it, and we were going through a few iterations quite quickly in the session, like, okay, let's try this. Oh, it doesn't work. Let's try this. And between John and Travis, let me tell you, if y'all, anybody listening, like, those two men work like no one I've ever worked with in the best way. They're so talented. They're so fast. They're so prolific. It's so inspiring. So we were literally just trying everything. And I love that because I'm a little neurotic and obsessive anyway. So I'm like, yeah, let's do that. Oh, let's try that. Oh, let's throw the pan through the window and see what it sounds like. Like, we were doing all these things. And then to be 100, I think Trav honestly was talking about that band Horror for a second. I think he was talking about this band Horror. Shouts out to them.
Yeah.
And I was like, true, okay. And we started kind of just like thinking about the space between the lyrics that they were leaving, and we were kind of on that vibe. And then we just started writing "Walking in My Shoes." Like, it just kind of, to be honest, I think the jamming horror for a second really sort of got us in that mindset. So shouts out to them and thanks for that.
Yeah.
I mean, it also, he's not lying. It is the fastest studio process you've ever been through, but not saying that you rush. It's just so thorough and there's no time wasted. Like I think the first time that I came in and you were recording, I swear you did like 200 takes in like 40 minutes.
Of all different things.
Yeah, it was just
like everything
nonstop, every idea. Even first time I went to record with John, I got more takes in 15 minutes of an entire song than I do in like usually a full day somewhere.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah.
But it works, and it's sick to see them work that way and then get acclimated to it, because I don't think it's something that if you haven't worked with them before, you almost don't expect it to ever work that way.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What was the weirdest thing they made you do?
That's a good question. It's always kind of weird, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You're in a room with Travis Barker and John Feldman.
Right.
Like, that in and of itself to me is weird. Like, just being there. Me personally, like, let me again, I'm going to paint you another picture. Like, I'm from, like, Inglewood, California, Section 8 housing, like, food stamps. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where I'm from. And all of my homeboys gangbang or they're locked up. Or, you know, they're doing some shit in tech. You know what I'm saying? Like, or my other friends. Like, I'm not from this world like that. So, just generally or initially, just me listening to Blink-182 or Goldfinger was already kind of weird and very aberrant for me coming from where I'm from. So, to be in those rooms with them, to be homeboys with them, to look at my phone back in the day and see, like, John Feldman or Travis Barker, right, like, texting me was, like, I was a joke. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you can like fake text people, like, this is the prime minister or this is the pope. Like, you can do that with apps. I'm like, for sure someone's doing this to me. So, I mean, the whole process is, it's not even necessarily, I don't want to say weird, it's just crazy. And it's still to this day, even though now they're like, they're homeboys, we straight buy like birthday gifts and Christmas gifts for each other, I'm still tripping that I'm dropping off a plant to John Feldman or a cookie jar that looks like a French bulldog to Travis Barker. Like, that is crazy.
Yeah.
So
that is actually very
isn't that wild?
Cool.
Like,
that's so cool.
Yeah, it's crazy. It is cool. Like, and I'm very thankful for them. We're very thankful for them. And the thing, and I want everyone really real quick, I want everyone to know those two dudes, they're good people. Like, they care about what happens to this project. They care about the message. They care about us as individuals. Like, they take care of us, like, straight up, you know, like, almost like mentors in a lot of ways. And we're lucky to have them be a part of this whole collective idea, real.
I'll say one of my favorite things about those dudes, and John especially, is when we get in a room to write, the first thing he says is, okay, what do we want to say? Not like, okay, what's the riff? Okay, what are we saying?
Yeah.
Like, what's, and I think that's huge. It just says a lot about where his mind is and how, you know, it aligns with us. And I've been in a few bands and I've never built a song like that. I'll be honest. You know, it's usually, all right, let's hear this riff. Let's build off the riff. And it works for whatever band. You don't have to do that in every band. I'm just saying with this, where the message is everything, he knows that. So he's like, cool. So what are we talking about? Mm-hmm. I dig that. Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad you said that, because I was going to get to, you know, the message of this band. Mm. You know, there's so much internet talk about, you know, musicians, you know, just shut up and play the music. We don't care what your opinions are. And I've always found that to be such a weird thing, because I feel like music has always been, you know, political and opinionated. Mm. You know, if you're not making music that doesn't have a message behind it, it's kind of empty.
Yeah.
So the fact that you guys are, you know, From the opening of the gate, step one is, what do we want to say?
Mm.
That makes perfect sense to me, hearing that.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. I mean, every movement in whatever direction we take will always have some sort of purpose or, a method to it. And there's a protocol that we have, you know what I'm saying? Like, it needs to make sense and it needs to find itself similar. Everything that we do will be in a similar effort, always. It has to be, because I believe that the message is a very contingent and integral piece of what this whole thing is. You know, we're writing the soundtrack and we're releasing, you know, these audio broadcasts, but there's a message that is being propped up every time, you know.
It's also helpful because, like, playing the way that we do it gives you something to think about. I mean, it's not like we're consistently all hyper the minute that you get on stage or whatever, but having something to think about and you know, at times trying to be a voice or a reflection of what other people are feeling, I don't know, it kind of gives you that extra emphasis in whatever, whether it's like hitting your drum or playing guitar, whatever it is, having that just makes it feel more intense every time. So I think we probably wouldn't even be the same band if those weren't integrated into every song, those sessions anyway.
Actually, Eric, you just reminded me, for people who haven't seen you live yet, you have a very, very powerful way of starting the show. You did it in Vegas. You can see it in some of the YouTube videos you guys do, your live performances, of, you know, Jason, you're out there and you're standing and you have a hood over your head and there's this, you know, this message playing beforehand. And then as you guys get ready, you reach up, you rip the freaking hood off, and then you guys just go into it. And like, you know, where did that idea come from? And you know, do you remember the first time pulling that off and how you felt?
Yeah, the idea, it sort of manifested itself as we were nearing our first performance, our first venue performance, which was August 31st of last year. We were sort of discussing various ways to open the show. And I know in my mind, there was a vision, there was something playing in my head every time I thought about the show. And it was, we went through a various, I guess, examples of what could happen. And we ended it with just sort of, in my head, it was clamor. It was like this sort of cacophonous thing that built and built and built. At the end, so I guess the cacophony was at the end. The beginning was like very direct, distilled. This is what's happening. This is, and I want people to understand that when you see it, if you feel uncomfortable or confronted, you're supposed to. And after you feel that, you can ask yourself why, or you can ask me, or you can ask the guys what we were saying or why you felt that way. If you want to have the discussion, you can, because that's what it's intended to do. It's intended to make people think and feel something. So, yes, like me coming out with a hood on my head, a black hood, by the way, in a black suit, not the other one. Let me paint you another picture. I ain't got no white on. It's all black. But, you know, again, it's sort of the nuances are anything from, you know, a guillotine, you know, like someone just ready to chop your head off, or, you know, the antithesis to problems that we're seeing right now where, you know, silly men walking around with tiki torches at rallies. You know what I mean? Like, we're offering an antithesis to that, and we're also offering you a moment to think and feel something that is confronting, but it is the reality. This is what's happening right now, and that's how once we acknowledge it, then we can take it on.
Expanding on that, could a band like the Fever 333 exist without the climate we have today in this country?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes, it could. And I say unfortunately because we as a people, it seems as though there's a commonality in the sort of common denominator that we're finding is we're still having a hard time understanding and offering empathy to each other and finding a way where we can work. I get it. Like, look, I'm a realist. I'm not like this crazy, idyllic sort of searching man where I go, oh, we can just all live in peace and harmony. Like, I know where we're at. I get it. I've studied it. I've observed it. I've lived it on both ends of the spectrum. And I think that as a people, we're finding ourselves getting closer, getting closer, getting closer. And then something else might occur. And we can't stray off the path too much. I think if we're always focusing on progress, no matter what, then we'll be okay in most capacities. And this project will exist in perpetuity, probably, because as human beings, we always hope for progress. That's how we exist. That's how we survived. It's coded in our DNA. So we would just be a band that focuses on progress, and that's what we're doing right now. And the current climate is just one facet, or it's one picture that we're going to paint, or it's one song that we're going to write. But we will continue encouraging progress, for sure.
I want to get back to those three C's, community, charity, and change. Portion of your ticket sales are donated to certain charities.
Yeah.
Tell me about some of the charities you've worked with so far and maybe, you know, ones you're looking to work with in the future.
So the show on tonight, actually, in Brooklyn, that'll be to the Lower East Side Girls Club. And we figured it was just sort of, it made sense. And we want to also discuss quickly the safe space for women that needs to be, that must be, that has to be, needs to be, must be created for women in alternative rock music, in society, in politics, in all of these patriarchal, you know, sort of built and founded things. We need to create a safe space for women. And we observed what the Lower East Side Girls Club was doing, and we felt as though that was, you know, one of a perfect place to donate these proceeds to. So shouts out to them. We've also worked with Inner City Arts, a place at home that offers resources and classes and another safe space for inner city youth in Los Angeles County. So they, a lot of these kids get bused in too. They're not just from the surrounding area of the facility, but they're from all over LA County. And when Steven and I went there to visit and just, you know, get a feel for it, we realized how selfless these people were, how wonderful they were, how amazing sort of offering that they're giving to our youth, and really understanding the worth in empowering our youth. I think that's something we forget often, is that beyond our timeline, there are those that will succeed us, and for posterity's sake, like, we have to do these things and make sure that we leave or do our best to leave this place in a better position than when we were here. And, you know, for the future, Southern Poverty Law Center, ACLU, you know, those are huge ones and big ones. And I personally worked with them in the past in other projects. And also with the group, we're going to have something called the Walking in My Shoes Foundation, and that'll be specific to us. And what we do is we will choose various charities for various issues and instances, whether it's reactive. Currently, it would be something for gun control. You know, we would absolutely do something, and we have been currently very vocal and will continue to be very vocal about gun control. And if I may, I know I'm like going on and on and on, but I've got a mic, sorry. I'm going to say it. Currently, right now in our country, I understand our liberties. I understand that there are rights that people feel as though they maybe have taken away from them. This is not our effort. Our efforts are simply to acknowledge those that have been affected by laws that are far too loose, that are quite unnecessary in their degree to which you can purchase, the age at which you can purchase, the free sort of market where you can purchase with a history that could lead you to, you know, dangerous, I guess, use of the weapon, and also just the capacity at which and the caliber at which the weapon operates. Yeah. Like, these are the things that we're talking about, and the statistics. Again, it all comes down to statistics. Like, there are statistics showing in America, there in Michigan, when Michigan, you know, had the gun ban gun violence went down 138%, and then once the gun ban was removed, and then the gun violence within that year went up 38%. You know, the numbers could be off, but needless to say, it lessened it. And all I'm saying is, I'm not trying to take your guns away from y'all. If you want, I get it. Like, I'm not here to say that. But I am saying that there are people dying by the hands of others because it was too easy for them to get a gun. It was too easy for them to show up with the gun, and it was too easy for them to pull that trigger. Also, people have been asking me to talk about the mental health issue that is a contingent piece of it. I understand that, but I'm specifically just trying to talk about the things that are killing people. And yes, mental health is a massive part of it too. I just don't want to completely, I guess, just skew off of the major issue that I'm discussing when we're trying to focus on what it is killing these young people and adults and so on and so forth. So, sorry.
That's quite all right. I had no intention of reeling you in on that one. I do want to add, you know, I feel mental health is a very important part of that issue too, but I also feel that sometimes it's kind of used as an excuse to draw the discussion away from guns.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that everyone that says that is doing that. By no means am I saying that. I am saying that once we focus, it's hard. It's hard because understanding policy, like, I went through a program as a youth and continued on into my adult years, I went through a program that was literally a mock legislature and court. So I understand the process that is enacting a bill, putting a bill into play, veto laws, veto powers. Like, I understand it. And you cannot offer an amalgamation of two issues in one bill. So that's why right now I'm discussing gun control. I will also happily discuss mental health, because I am a firm believer in the I believe that we are offering a disservice as a community when we devalue mental health, when we devalue mental health services. And, you know, I think that currently, again, like I'm saying, those things are also very, very important. But one issue at a time for me as an artist, as an activist, and I'm trying my best to acknowledge every one of those issues. And when people get upset about when you're talking about one thing because you're not talking about another, I just ask that you please try to understand that we are here trying to make a better place. And we can't talk about all at once, because then we spread ourselves too thin. But we will, in fact, acknowledge it, understand it, and try our hardest to offer aid, efforts, and services in that direction. I believe you. I encourage you to speak on it. But please don't get offended or upset when we're talking about an issue that we believe in as well. And both ways. When people want it, when they say, but we want our guns. We came here to this country with the Second Amendment kept us away from a tyrannical government. It did keep us away from a tyrannical government. Also, when we had muskets and when it took fucking 5 minutes to put a gun together to shoot a pellet. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's when that law was written. We also live in a country where black folk had to use separate bathrooms, and black folk had to use separate, water fountains. And we also come from a country where Native Americans were raped and pillaged and stolen from. And we also live in a country where immigrant work is still used to this day by our current administration to make a dollar, a bigger dollar. We still live in that world. So we're evolving.
Right.
So our amendments can evolve with us.
Right.
And we can make a safer place, and we can make a better place, and we can make a place where we still take care of ourselves and we can still protect ourselves. I understand it. Mm-hmm. I'm from the hood. Like, I get it. I get it. But I'm just saying the way that we're doing it, people are dying. People are dying. You know, how can you ask your kid to go to school and then wonder, I wonder if he or she is going to come home today. Mm-hmm. That's a reality. That's a reality for people. And that's really, I find that to be quite insane.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, shit, man, if this music thing don't work out, you definitely have a career in public office.
Who knows, man? Me and Jello Biafra, huh? We could do it.
Absolutely. You know, because it's that kind of passion and that kind of intelligence that I feel like we really need.
Thanks, man. Thank you. I just read a couple books, but thank you. I appreciate it.
We could all do with a little more book reading. Actually, while I'm at it, are you guys reading anything currently? Anything you'd like to recommend to people listening?
You go ahead. I know I saw what you were reading on
the airport. I'm reading this book called Effortless Mastery, and I need to try it out before, but it's basically talking about like the mental state that you get in trying to perform really difficult music and how to get over this stuff that, like, the obstacles that you basically create in your own mind. But it's hard because the suggestions it's giving, it's like until you actually put it to the test in front of a bunch of people, you don't know how effective it is. So we'll see. Maybe some of that will come out on this tour.
Good. Steven, you reading anything right now?
Not currently. I finished Not Your Negro by James Baldwin, it was 4 weeks ago, maybe more. But it was, like, given to me a while ago. I just didn't get around to reading it for like a year for some reason, but it's great. I mean, I'm a black guy, grew up in the South, you know, identity issues, you know, not really knowing much about my history deeply, and understanding like the black identity and knowing the black struggle but not getting it, you know, like feeling it but not understanding why. And kind of how deep it runs. So, and it's funny, like growing up meeting a lot of people like me in different cities, and especially in the South, it's cool to be able to talk to people and like explain to them, maybe who haven't read it or who have parents who can explain to them why things are the way they are, why they feel the way they do, like to talk to them and explain to them, like, yo, like, this is why this is. This is why this feels that way. This is why you feel, you know, kind of alienated in a group of white people, you know, or this is why you feel this way, you know. Yeah, so that was probably about a month ago I finished that, but I'm not currently reading anything right now.
Yeah, I read Ready Player One.
Oh, yeah?
It was great. Yeah. I don't read sci-fi. I'm not into it at all. That book was fantastically written. It was incredible. I'm currently reading Negotiating with Giants, and also concurrently alongside, I'm rereading Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates, which I strongly, strongly implore everyone listening to take a read. I think that it speaks to various pieces of our culture and gives a good understanding of why things may feel the way they do for others that maybe you wouldn't understand otherwise. So,
kind of related to that, you know, you guys are going on the road now. Are you bringing books with you? Are you bringing music with you? What are you bringing with you to pass the time between stops?
Yeah, just books. Really. Yeah. For me, it's like books. And I've actually forgot. I didn't bring my skateboard. It's usually a skateboard and books. And I have like a lifestyle brand, so I usually bring like tools to sort of, you know, help with designing, you know, anything from apparel to the grooming stuff. But yeah, just trying to be creative and read and skateboard. Yeah.
Steve?
I didn't bring my skateboard either. I normally try to skate, but yeah, just music really for me. I try to just keep up with a lot of hardcore bands, a lot of metal bands and stuff. The new Extinction AD stuff is just perfect. Do you listen to them?
I don't know them, no.
They're perfect. They're from New York. Long Island. Yeah. If you like riffs, like, they're just the best. They're the best. I mean, you're wearing a Mastodon shirt. Like, Extinction AD is amazing. Like, it's some dudes from that band, This Is Hell. Just perfect. They're good to skate to as well.
I'll get into that.
You should. Yeah. They're great.
Yeah. I'm always looking for good music recommendations.
Especially
from people who know firsthand, you know?
Yeah. Dude, they're so good.
I forgot my skateboard as well.
Into the mic.
I forgot my skateboard as well. But usually, yeah, it's one of the first things packed. And then aside from music, I always bring a sketchbook and whatever. Like, it's hard. Like, I start a lot of books, but actually getting into it, I like test that all out at home, and then usually like every other tour one actually makes it on the road. So that's the one that I am into most recently. But honestly, most of the time goes towards music, skating, and drawing whenever we get a free minute away from the venue.
Speaking of design and drawing, who came up with the cat logo?
That was a collaboration with myself and my buddy Jonathan Whitehead, also known as Hate Street. He's been a partner of mine, whether it was making designs for my old band or my current lifestyle brand, Gentleman in Real Life. He is one of my favorite artists of all time, and he's happens to be one of my closest friends, and we've had some sort of bond since we were younger, and we've continued to be friends and collaborating creatively for, I mean, over a decade. So yeah, we were just kind of talking about strong imagery, and we were throwing examples back and forth, and I'm, you know, a big follower of the Black Panther Party movement and understanding how, you know, they initiated the aesthetic as well as the ideals and the activations and how all of it sort of, they were all hinged upon each other. So aesthetic value and imagery was massive when we started this project. And so myself and John Whitehead, we just got together and riffed on this cat head that we were developing and ended up with the one you see now. Yeah.
Nice. So you guys are hitting the road, playing a show in Brooklyn tonight. You're playing Long Island this Saturday. Tell me what else you got coming up for this year.
We'll be popping back and forth in the sort of interim of festival season with like a lot of the Danny Wimmer Presents festivals. So we're playing a few of those, and then in between those, we'll be out with popping on shows with this band, The Used. And I believe also at this run, I believe we'll be two shows with a band called Nothing More. And yeah, we'll just kind of be jumping around, trying our best to have as many demonstrations as possible, open this movement up to as many people as possible, and keep doing our thing, you know, like really creating a space and a forum for people to invest in and feel safe and share their ideas and move the conversation forward. And an interesting thing about these festivals is they're definitely in a lot of more red states and a lot of beliefs or whether the prominent belief system is not necessarily aligned with ours. And that is not by any means even really a challenge. It's actually like an offering for us, I believe, to sort of move the conversation forward and have the actual discussion. I'm not even there to really, you know, sort of, I guess, indoctrinate these people. You know, it's not necessarily my goal, but it is to have the conversation and move it forward. And also to have some sort of a little bit of controversy, I think, is necessary so that I can analyze where I'm coming from just as much as I want to present where I'm coming from. I should also be analyzing it with every step I take. So, you know, I'm very happy and excited to be in those areas and thankful that people want to speak their minds. No matter what it is they want to speak about, I encourage speaking your mind.
Good. I think I also saw you guys were playing the Afropunk Festival this year.
That's absolutely correct. Yes. Yeah, that's actually, it's good. Okay. Probably some biases here, like, but it's one of my favorite festivals in the world. In the world, like, and now it's international. It you know, it began when I first played it. I believe it was just in Brooklyn. I met Matthew, who basically is the brainchild of Afropunk. Guys, shouts out to Matthew. He is unbelievable. He's been so gracious, so, you know, helpful, supportive of myself and now this project. And Afropunk is truly and. I'm just going to say it. Look. Pro-black isn't anti-white. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you put Afro in front of something, it don't mean like, hey, white people can't come in here. Like, it's not what we're saying. Like, and it's not about that. Afropunk is all inclusive. You know what I'm saying? Black, white, Asian, Latino, Native, gay, straight, queer, trans, everybody come through to Afropunk, because that's where you can kick it. You can be you. You can be, you know, fly that freak flag. We are with you. You know what I'm saying? I'm right underneath that freak flag with you. Let's go. Like, Afropunk is the illest, and it's so inclusive, and that's the beauty of it. So it's not, the last thing it is too esoteric or ostracizing anyone. It is like straight up, come here, be free. Like, that is the illest. So I got super excited talking about it. Afropunk is one of the illest.
It's
sure.
Five, yeah.
I'm actually really excited, too. I think the last time I went there was to see You Would Let Live.
Hell yeah.
And, you know, I had a great time, and yeah. I know this is radio, but this may surprise some people. I'm a white guy. I felt right at home. Like,
yeah.
I didn't feel like anybody was looking at me like, oh, what's that guy doing
here?
No, it was a beautiful day. And I've been to a lot of festivals.
Yeah.
That one, like, is in my top three of, like,
nice.
Good
right?
times.
Right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And that's the feeling, that thing you're talking about right there. Walking in an area or an environment where you don't get second looked like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, where people aren't, like, breaking their necks to be like, oh, what's this person doing there? Like, you don't. I was, like, straight up anonymous. Like, nobody. Like, I was just another person because everybody was doing them. Therefore, there was no constraints. There were no constructs. There were no barriers. Everyone was just them, and that was okay. And it was beautiful. I'm talking beautiful. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was incredible. Incredible. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, beautiful, incredible is definitely words I would use to describe the music you guys are making right
Thank
now.
You.
I'm so excited to see you guys hit the road and see people's reaction to what you're doing, because I feel like you're on the right path.
Thank
so,
you.
Guys, thank you so much for coming in. This was a blast, and I can't wait to see what happens next.
Thanks, brother. Thank you.
Thank you.
More episodes of Hard Drive DL at harddriveradio.com. Download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app and keep listening.